Welcome to The Catbird Speaks, the podcast for BP Southside, the baseball prospectus local devoted entirely to the Chicago White Sox and their brilliant baseball playing skills and the happiness they bring to the Southside of Chicago. joining me tonight for a podcast mid-trade deadline chaos is one of the most very special people in the world, Nicholas Schaefer. In Manhattan,
James.
Kansas.
That's fantastic. From Manhattan.
Wow, that kind of blinked. Manhattan, New York.
I was going to say, you know.
I was hoping this was Mark secretly, and now it's revealed.
See, the problem with this now is you did that in like the first 30 seconds, so Mark doesn't even need to put the work in to get the benefit of that blunder. Or a Freudian slip, or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, as we speak, some Twitter account that I don't really know who they are saying that Lucroy got pulled. Frankly, Lucroy trade rumors shifted in the last 6 weeks from, hey, maybe like the White Sox should look at Lucroy to are the Indians going to finish 15 games ahead of the White Sox or 20 games ahead of the White Sox? So who cares?
I'm James Fegan, your editor of the site in Elkhart, and also pop in on occasion will likely be my cat.
Nice.
Wish
I could match.
It's funny you mentioned the Indians. Hawk was like bringing up the Indians from 2005 about how they came back from 15 games down on August 1st and how the White Sox did less than 15 games down. So two crucial things there. Pretty much any like middle of the road team that's trailing, comparing them to the 2005 Indians is being unkind to the 2005 Indians, who were a really great team that would have like won most divisions if they weren't up against like a World Series champion caliber club.
Yeah, and for the wild card competing against, that was the height of the National League hemorrhaging games to the AL and Interleague play. Like, the American League had like a 650 winning percentage collectively against the NL for like 3 or 4 years in a row. 05 was right in the middle of that. And that was at the peak of Yankees and Red Sox can like actually do whatever they want with all their money. So yeah, like the Indians won 93 games with a plus 147 run differential and did not make the playoffs. Because the Yankees and Red Sox each won 95, the White Sox won 99. That doesn't really, I don't think that really happens now outside of, like, I guess the NL Central last year.
So another crucial detail about that comp is that the Indians didn't make the playoffs. They didn't get all the way back. They never actually tied the team that they were chasing down, and they finished six games back. Like, yes,
although
they had, like, a nice crest where things seem hopeful, but, like, that's not actually, like, a happy tale of comebacks are possible. It's like, comebacks are really hard, and even if you do like amazing things, you'll still probably like regress to the mean of it and not make it.
They could have. I think the White Sox, they had a three-game set with the White Sox to end the season, and the White Sox clinched. I think like
the White Sox clinched the game before that series started.
Right,
the Indians were still fighting for the wild card spot,
and the White Sox
just swept them and ruined their season.
Yeah, despite like benching all of their regulars, I think.
I don't have words for what the White Sox just let Byron Buxton do to them. It's
well, he's fast.
No. that doesn't excuse everything that happened here.
I'm switching from game day to opening up the feed because, you know,
they let him reach on a ground ball to third that Abreu dropped. And then he stole second, and the throw, like, short-hopped on Anderson and, like, get in the center. Then Shuck, like, I don't know, played with the ball and asked him what its name was for a while Buxton, like, rounded third. And then, like, his throw brought Navarro up, like, the third base line, and then Navarro let the ball, like, slide out of his glove. While
yeah, Navarro had him. He was out if Navarro doesn't just drop the ball. That's an infield single inside the park home run, correct?
Yeah, but like reached on an error.
Well, it's like two errors, right?
Maybe three. Good lord.
I mean, it's you know, I don't follow any other team this closely, but the Robin Ventura era White Sox seem capable of, like, the most humiliating prolonged meltdowns of any team I've ever seen outside of, like, the losing on purpose Astros. Because that's who that plays. That's the only team I can think of who does plays like that.
It reminds me of, like, the ridiculous, like, little grounder or, like, little infield single that, like, Irving Gore scored from, like, second on with the Royals in 2014. Terrence Gore?
Yeah, who's Irving Gore?
Some amalgamation of Irving Falou and Terrence Gore.
Irving, I'm going to see what Google has on Irving Gore. Something on the white pages. Death records? 1940s census. Yeah, no. That's
probably not the right guy then.
No, I mean, it's one of those arguments where you, like, you know, it's like the standard moves of a chess match where it's like, man, the Reventura's in-game moves are, like, terrible. And then the retort is, well, in-game moves aren't the biggest part of a manager's job. And you're like, okay, well, and then, like, the counter move to that is, well, the clubhouse seems divided and miserable and, like, racked with horrible controversies that are just, like, completely ridiculous. And, like, at a fundamental level, the team just, like, completely collapses anytime they have an opportunity to do anything positive. So, like, what's the point of Robin's clubhouse acumen? Is it just a given that he's done after this year?
I mean, he's not contracted, and the team's a flop. But, you know, I mean, most any other organization, I would think he's on, like, the hot seat. But,
right.
I mean, most organizations don't hire him in the first place. I mean, he had no experience.
Right.
Or they at least, like, bring him up in their system a little bit.
Yeah, like, couldn't you have brought in someone else and made him, like, the bench coach or something?
Yeah, or, like, if you really thought, like, he's a manager, like, send him to, I don't know.
Charlotte
or even Winston-Salem or Birmingham. It's really unprecedented. Yeah. So, like, how do you decide when the unprecedented things are going to stop happening?
I feel like the other things that the other managers have done that are either, wasn't Brad Ausmus the same deal?
It's possibly similar.
Wasn't Ausmus, I don't know if Weiss was managing before they brought him in. Or Kevin Cash. I don't know if he had been managing, but, if your process is terrible and your results are terrible, I don't know what else you got left.
So my concern with doing a podcast around now is that, you know, with stuff like people saying Benintendi's been pulled from the lineup and all sorts of possibilities, maybe Chris Sale is on the move, is that this podcast will wind up being like one of those 911 calls. You just see us reacting in real time.
I don't know. I mean, I thought us gloating about the Royals losing that World Wild Card game in 2014 and being wrong in real time was pretty amusing. Buxton is having a breakout game.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Byron Buxton has arrived articles launched by his, like, shit-kicking of the White Sox tonight.
Also, the White Sox lineup tonight is breathtaking because you have... here, let me... I was looking at it earlier. Just going by on base percentage, you have... I think Anderson's leading it off. And Anderson is not a problem, but is on bases 272. And
I mean, he's cooled off. He's having the struggles that you would expect him to have.
Yeah.
You didn't expect him to come up and lead the team in OPS. That would be a stupid thing to expect. Like, his bat's not supposed to be arrived yet.
And frankly, you know, on the one hand, it's not really optimal to put him, you know, to put him at the top of the order. But at the same time, if you've decided this season is a lost one, which is the correct analysis, then this just gets him the most plate appearances possible, and I'm kind of fine with that. But John Heyman's tweeting about Lucroy's friends? All right. But you have Saladino in for the sick Frazier. You have Sanchez in for the injured Lori. You have Navarro in for the injured Avila. And Shuck in for the injured Austin Jackson. So I think that's, what is that, like four or five guys whose on-base percentage is like 300 or lower. And then Avisail's playing for Eaton, who's like totally beat up and never gets a night off. So that's another dude with an on-base around 305. So that's most of the lineup. Like, I just named a whole bunch of...
I can't believe Avisail is the option to add more guys at the OBP over 300. Like, he's...
He's at, like, 305.
He's like, on the higher end of that spectrum.
306. I mean, Sanchez has barely played at all, but he's post... Like, at a certain point, I don't know why he's getting reps over Lurie, because his OPS is 326.
Yeah, it's amazing how little he's hit. Like, even knowing what we know, and obviously he'll just crush a double, so obviously we're idiots. But it's amazing, even by Carlos Sanchez standards, knowing that he can go into a full slump, it's amazing how much he struggled, even like with the crazy, like small part-time work.
Right, because like, I mean, he hasn't looked like he's like putting good at-bats together and getting hard breaks. He's just, you know, totally overmatched.
Do you remember like having like Micah, I feel like I bring this up like once a podcast, like having Micah Johnson, Marcus Semien, and Carlos Sanchez, and be like, one of these guys is bound to be a major league first baseman,
second baseman.
Am I okay? Am I like dead?
I don't know, man.
Micah Thompson,
oh,
Jesus.
That got tagged. Yeah. Fall down in right field.
I cannot believe that we have you cheering the White Sox doing something good recorded.
Well, here's the thing. It was Justin Morneau, who is very easy to root for.
Yeah.
And shows how... The thing with Justin Morneau bringing him in, all it does at this point is serve as just like this damning indictment on the organization, where it's like, all you had to do was find like a dude like this who is like okay to upgrade the DH slot, and you just didn't do it. You just refused. You didn't like shuffle through different options. You didn't like scan the waiver wire. You weren't picking anybody up. For a while, you had a 3-man position player bench that was just Saladino, Sands, and Shuck, or sorry, Saladino, Sands, and whoever the backup catcher was on a given night. That was it. You didn't try anything. Like, I've joked about this before, but that line from The Simpsons where Ned Flanders' parents say, "We've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas," like, that was the White Sox approach to the offense this year. And, like, Morneau finally arrived, and he's, like, not great, but he's obvious, like, just jumps off of the screen as better than Avisail Garcia. And guess what? Like, it's too late. It doesn't matter, because... their playoff chances fell below 10% by the time he arrived.
Yeah, it's hard to map out what's going forward without understanding what this year was, and I don't really understand what they did this year. Like, I don't know, like, was this year not really a win now a year? Was it not really, like, the time to, like, invest more? I mean, what did they see this season as?
That's
they
so
kind
strange.
Of, like, seemed like they were biding their time a bit.
And I wrote about this in an article a few weeks ago, but it's something that I've yet to have anybody explain to me or address in a satisfying, you know, in any sort of way that makes sense. Where, you know, you've got two sides of the ball. You know, you got the pitching side and the hitting side. Where pitching, you had a lot more, you know, reason to be confident than on the offensive side of the ball, right? Like, you got a lot more, you know, elite guys. You have more mid-level guys. You have more organizational depth and competence at that level. And, you know, you had two spots in the rotation that were problematic, and a couple spots in the bullpen that opened up, especially with some injuries. But like, the White Sox did a lot to try to shore up the rotation. Like, they traded for James Shields, which was at the time like the biggest trade of the season, I think. They shuffled through Latos. They, like, grabbed, like, a ton of guys. And then On offense, they made zero moves, just none. There, even though there were players who were obvious upgrades just sitting out there, they just didn't do it. And nobody has ever explained to me any rational reason why that was the case. It wasn't a money thing. I mean, they took on $9 million in Shields. They spent $3 million to scratch a lotto ticket on Latos. I guess you could count Rollins as the same sort of move.
That had a really low ceiling.
I know. They both did. But that's fine. That's why I equate them. But, like, it's just really strange to me that they didn't try for Loney or any of the other guys who were sort of out there just to try them. Not to say that they would work, but it's like...
Right. Like, the LaRoche thing really did have brutal timing. I mean, clearly they, for whatever reason, thought he was going to be functional this year or bounce back. And...
He'd probably still be better than Avisil's been.
He'd probably be on the DL.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's fair.
His back, like, locked up the first day. I know Spring is, like, working all the kinks out, but, like...
That's true. And
the guy,
and,
like, old guy had bad back, and comes back, and then hits a home run, and then has bad back again. Like, it didn't fill me with hope.
Right, but, and if your season is built around, we need Adam LaRoche at age 37 or whatever to be useful, and then when he... becomes unavailable for an unpredictable reason instead of one of the very predictable reasons, you're just like, well, paralyzed with confusion and like helplessness for 4 months.
I mean, at the time, it definitely happened where, like, Pedro Alvarez had been signed the previous week, and that was really like the last of the guys.
I think he signed like 2 days before.
Yeah, something ridiculous. Like, and that was the last of the guys at that moment that I would say, like, yeah, that's a viable. Stick him at DH and maybe platoon him, and you'll get a major leaguer option.
Loney.
But then Loney came open. Then you had the whole crop of guys who comes open at the end of spring.
Loney twice, who, by the way, like, you can say, well, Loney had been terrible in 2015. He was better and younger than LaRoche in 2015. So, you know, like, one guy's plan A, but the other guy is, like, not even worth picking up on waivers? Like, what?
Yeah, like... The lack of activity from there on out is perplexing.
Like, is the plan, like, if you're in the front office and you're having these conversations, you're just sitting there watching, you know, for year, you know, 7 out of 8 or whatever in a row where your offense is terrible and Avisil Garcia is terrible yet again, and you're like, what's the conversation like at that point? You're just like, well, we'll just see if it gets better. Like, did you buy a rabbit's foot today? Like, I've got my fingers crossed and my toes crossed. Like, what's the plan?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, they talked about having legitimate hope for Avisail this year, and I disagree that was, like, a legitimate path to, like, hope for. Like,
I don't know what's worse, whether that's, like, an excuse for not doing anything or if that's real. Which is more damning for the front office? Because if you can't identify that he can't play after 2,000 plate appearances or whatever, like, what's your evaluation skill at? Like, why do you have this job?
I mean, the raw tools are definitely there. I just nothing has showed up in terms of the refinement on a major league level.
I mean, like, the raw tools are there for, like, Terry Crews, but he struck out in the, like, Celebrity All-Star game, so.
Like, Brooklyn 9-9 Terry Crews?
Yeah.
I mean, he's kind of aged out, and he's physically maxed.
But you know what I mean, though? Like, if you can't separate raw athleticism or, like, raw strength from baseball skill, then you aren't cut out for being an evaluator. That's kind of... I mean, like, if you can't tell the difference between Chris Davis and Dallas McPherson, like, they were both gigantic dudes who had tons of raw power. One guy actually could play in the majors and one couldn't. That's important. That's worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
There's a lot of people busting their shit in the walls tonight.
Oh, well, that's Avisail, so who cares?
So I in the spirit of giving the White Sox credit, the two things that on this roster of, like, I'm trying to understand why they did so little is they probably expected, you know, elite bat year from Jose Abreu. Maybe even optimistically, you expect him to strike the middle ground between 2014 and 2015.
Oh, or, the best, I don't know,
put, like, average and power together and, like, have a 180 OPS plus or something stupid. And instead you have this super floundering year. And you probably expected Carlos Rodon to have this hyper-quick ascent and become, like, one of the top 25 starters in baseball. And that hasn't happened at all. And he's been hurt, and he's just, in general, struggled with command. And they probably picked, like, the worst catchers they could find for him.
Well, you can... All right, so I'll address Rodon first. Again, you can have your strategy based on hope, but that's not really a strategy. That's just, like, praying for good fortune. That's like saying, my retirement plan is I'm buying lotto tickets. That's not... That's just, you know, you're just being an idiot. Rodon was always going to have a significant... potential for a season just like that. Like, this was the most, to me, other than him missing a couple starts to this, like, injury, this was an extremely likely outcome for him, right? I mean,
definitely likely, but I think as far as I mean,
he hasn't even been that bad.
He hasn't, but he hasn't been the thing that, like, raises their...
No, but you got like a random Cy Young results month from Latos, and you've had a random Cy Young results month from Miguel Gonzalez. So I think that kind of, like, balances out your luck on that end.
Yeah. You also had Eric Johnson just basically slide off the major league, like, radar.
Well, you of all people are the least surprised by that.
True.
His stuff backed up. It happens.
Yeah. And it look never at really Dylan
came Tate.
Back.
Look at Dylan Tate. His stuff backed up. It happens. What I'm saying is, even with Rodon disappointing, or, you know, not having something like, you know, like a breakout season, which, you know, was possible, you still have had, like, good run prevention as a staff. Like, that's still been the reality. But you have, out of 30 teams, including teams that hit pitchers, you're like 25th. In terms of offense, again.
Yeah, so obviously offense is a problem.
So Abreu is obviously a part of that. His OPS is like 100 points down from last year. And he's looked bad, and he's not hitting for power anymore, which is all that's, like, really depressing. And part of me is not sure whether that's just like, this is unfortunate. You know, just an unfortunate development, or he just aged faster than we'd hoped, or his approach, he was never particularly selective. And, you know, if any of his hit tool or power erodes, then maybe it would have exponential negative effects. But at the same time, I mean, this is not an organization that has demonstrated any ability to get the most out of its hitters. And I don't know how much of it's like, I don't know if the coaching staff could help at all. I used to not think that mattered all that much, but you have organizations like the Giants and the Reds, and or the Reds for a while, the Tigers, people who seem to get the most out of their bats. So and the White Sox are whatever the opposite of that is.
So you kind of surprised me by saying it was just 100 OPS drop from last year, not realizing last year was 100 OPS drop from the previous year.
Oh yeah,
we didn't sweat as much because it was an 850 OPS, so, you know, mm-hmm. You'll live with that. If I was seeing him from another team that was like, we're cutting bait on Jose Abreu, who's bad now, I'd be like, you're idiots. He's been, like, super above average 2 years, and he's still only 30. He's totally going to have another good year again. But yeah, as far as franchise building, you can't count on that. This is an extreme example that Muzzery made in his post this week, but it's one that holds up. But basically, like, the Cubs are getting, like, a super, like, basically bust, like, really bad offensive year from Jason Hayward. Like, probably worse than they could have foreseen. Like, it's far and away the worst of his career.
And Schwarber's knee exploded.
And Schwarber got, like, you know, clotheslined by the legs.
He got cut blocked.
Yeah, he got cut blocked. Schwarber played the Navy triple option in outfield.
And oh, and by the way, also
that wasn't a bitter Notre Dame fan comment at all.
Also, Soler, went full Avisail on them.
Yeah, I don't. From what I've heard, they weren't as surprised by that as maybe other people were.
Okay. Well, then I don't know why they didn't deal him.
I think they've been trying to.
Before then, before he got hurt and was demonstrably terrible. But
I mean,
anyway,
he's definitely disappointing. I don't think it's like, oh, I can't believe this.
No, but like, if you want to say, here's three things that really didn't work out for them, those are three things that really didn't work out for them. Like,
right.
Soler manifested all of the flaws in his game hard at age 24, and Schwarber's knee exploded, and Jason Hayward totally forgot how to hit.
Yeah. And those things aren't crippling. And yes, the Cubs are a super team by a lot of standards, but you shouldn't be. You have to be deep enough to have a core player have an even deeply disappointing season and be able to absorb it. Because you can't, like, if you're going to be a team perpetually that needs everything significant to break right, if you need to roll a six or else you don't make the playoffs, then it's very easy to not roll six eight times in a row.
Yeah, and if you, it's frustrating because, well, first of all, everybody needs to compare the White Sox to the Cubs at all times. There's 28 other teams too.
Right. It wasn't the best. But, it's just in my head.
But he raised the very fair point, which is that when it looked like they had something going that was good, they actually opened their wallet. They actually opened their wallet, because if you don't sign John Lester and John Lackey, that rotation's like pretty whatever, right? I mean,
very.
So
it's probably a lot of Adam Warren starts right now.
Yeah, so you know, and they signed Zobrist, and they filled every possible hole in their roster. And you use the expression, a blanket over a crevasse was sort of the plan, where, like, you know, this is a team that had a Javier Baez, who I think was super high risk, but, you know, to his credit, Baez managed to cut his K rate, and, like, you know, good for him. He looks like a good major leaguer.
He also looks like somebody who can play defense no matter what.
Yeah, but, like, coming into the season, like, they didn't just say, well, we have Javier Baez at second, and if his obvious risks bite us, we have no fallback option. They signed Zobrist anyway. They didn't not sign Zobrist because they had Baez. And granted, Zobrist is another extreme example because you can always find a place for him to play. But, like, it's so galling to have it just be like, our plan is to get the 90th percentile results on everything, and then maybe we'll win 88 games, and maybe every other team in our division, not just like a couple, will have suboptimal outcomes, and then we'll make the playoffs 1 year out of 10. Like, that can't be the plan. Because even now, I think the best thing they can do is play for 2017. I wrote a piece about that the other day, just based on, like, here's the cards they were dealt, here's how I would play them. Even then, you're still only playing for 2017, and I don't know how that sets you up for 2018.
I mean, they'll have an empty payroll.
Great. Maybe they can, like, spend it back up to an 80-win level or something like that.
I mean, it seems like the easiest way to fill out a lot of the holes with certainty and flexibility would be to just fence Quintana or Sale for a big coup. But then you'd have to have some confidence that Rodon is going to be a number two starter next year and Fulmer is going to be capable of throwing strikes at all, let alone starting. Like, you still would be stretching yourself to get, like, a 80th percentile, 90th percentile result from, you know, core development guys that you have confidence in, but, you know, you can always be asking too much of them.
I mean, I guess, like, what, if you trade Quintana for... And the way Quintana's looked this year, I'm, like, kind of feel more confident in him going forward than Sale. If you trade Quintana for what, like Mazzara and...
They love Gallo, apparently.
I mean, of course they do. Mazzara and Gallo. Okay, so you move Eaton back to center. And then Mazzara's in right, Melky's in left, and... I don't know. I feel like the only thing that really makes this team, like, special is that you have Quintana and Sale at the top.
Yeah, I mean, Eaton's good. But that's the core.
Eaton's their best position player. Where does he rank in the majors amongst team's best position player?
Probably not very good.
Is he, like, 20th?
Yeah, probably in that range. He shouldn't be the best position player because he's like a fringe all-star. And that's being generous considering he's never made or really deserved to make the all-star team. Possibly because, as I wrote about earlier this week, he decides to have a random like slump month every first half.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, is better than random two or three slump months like the rest of the roster.
Yeah, I mean, so many of the things that went wrong this year, though, were like, really predictable, right? Like, other than Abreu performing at, like, 80% of last year instead of 100% or better, what's been, like, surprising?
Statistic-wise, the catching platoon not hitting at all, I guess Navarro is surprising. Games level analysis. Navarro is an older, bad body catcher and hasn't had large amounts of playing time in years.
And the other problem with that is that Avila had a .362 on base percentage. So, like,
and then Avila got hurt, which he's been doing.
Yeah, exactly. So, where's the surprise for this year?
Some people talk about Frazier being a disappointment. Like, Frazier is totally what could have happened with Frazier. Like, we know he didn't get on base much, and he's hit a ton of home runs. Like, I guess there's been some slow bleed in his defensive metrics. He seems fine to me visually, but... him turning 30, that was entirely, like, anticipated.
This year is his worse than... His OPS... OPS isn't the best stat, but his OPS is down 30 points from last year and down only 20 points from the year before that. And this is better than his age 27 season by a lot, which was in 2013.
True Average still loves him because True Average loves power.
Right, but, like, this is, like, a tiny bit of batting average noise, and even then, it doesn't... This is kind of who he is.
Yeah, this is really useful. I mean, I think people got too caught up in, like, all-star first base, third baseman, and expected, like, a top five in baseball guy.
But his OPS is .771. The year before it was .806. The year before that it was .795. The year before that it was .721. Like, this is very normal. So, fine. Like, it's Abreu's the only thing, right? Robertson, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, Robertson, but, like, I don't know. How many games do you think that's cost them?
Oh, a couple of games in Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, they've had a lot of injuries in the bullpen. I mean, you never expect the White Sox to have a ton of pitching injuries. They have been, like, amazing in their avoidance of TJ surgery, but then again, the TJ got to Daniel Webb, and I don't think there's any good scenario where Daniel Webb was pitching 60 innings.
No, like, explain to me how Daniel Webb, like, is meaningfully different than, like, Michael Anoa and Tommy Canley.
Maybe worse.
Yeah, right?
I never seen Michael Ynoa have his catcher, like, set up inside on a right-hander, and then he throws it in, like, the left-handed batter's box. But I've seen Daniel Webb do that.
Although we did see Tommy Canley miss on an intentional walk.
And he shrimped last night's game.
Yeah, but, I mean, he scored one run in 12 innings against Ricky Nolasco and company.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't like a game like the bullpen failed, but like, it's funny watching the game of just seeing them run out of, like, Robin managed it well. He used Robertson. He just, he ran out of good relievers, and he finally had an inning where he's like, he had to turn to Dan Jennings and Tommy Canley. And Dan Jennings, they only avoided a four-walk inning because Dan Jennings hit somebody with three balls.
That's what's so crushing about this team is it's like, get a couple more just like competent dudes. Just a couple like major league, not even average, like slightly below average players at a couple of spots. And just like, it's like the problem's not the core. Because like, you look at last night's loss and Quintana pitched like a gem. And like they held their opponent to one run through 12 innings. And the Twins have all kinds of problems, but like they can hit a little bit. Certainly this Twins version that has like, you know, Kepler going pretty well and like Dozier's woken up again and like Grossman's getting on base a lot. Like
Sano's healthy.
It's an okay lineup. And if you hold an okay major league lineup to one run for 12 freaking innings, like you should be, you know what I mean? Like
You hold the Twins, especially the 12 innings of one run or two runs.
Oh, right. That's true. They did give up the second run, didn't they?
Well, Melky finally hit the ball to someone who wasn't Byron Buxton, so now the White Sox are winning again.
Now, spoilers. You're ahead of my MLB TV.
He literally like hit the ball to the same spot for maybe like 10 to 15 feet to the left. So that was Buxton's ball.
That was pitch number 69 for Malone.
Nice.
Smoked it twice now. Yeah, they're getting a great year out of Melky, too.
It's great, but it's also, like, definitely just, like, good, not great major league corner outfielder, and he's the best hitter in the lineup.
Yeah. I mean, like, the idea would be that you'd have Abreu and Eaton and guess Frazier, and that like Melky would be like your fourth bat, and that'd be like a really nice fourth bat, and obviously it doesn't play it out that way, but so a lot of people have gone in on the White Sox catching situation, which I get it because it's really really bad. I just have a hard time going too hard on them because it's like it's catcher, and wow, that was pretty brutal.
Abreu?
Yeah.
Remember, like, being, like, excited to watch him?
That was an 88-mile-an-hour fastball from a lefty right down the pipe on 0-0. And he popped it out to second base.
Not that, like, it's necessarily encouraging, because there's been three solid years of it happening frequently. But how is this a healthy Abreu? Like, he's either, like, injured with something, or he's just completely toast. Or, like, he has some ridiculously distracting personal crisis going on.
I mean, like, we've seen this organization just, like, twiddle their thumbs while players who shouldn't be in death spirals do. I mean, he's 29.
Yeah, but he's a big dude and not, like, chiseled or anything or athletic.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, he's 29. He's not 31, he's not 33. He's not Prince Fielder either.
No, I mean, I wouldn't I would expect a recovery, maybe even a couple of recovery seasons. There is definitely real decline here. I mean, his numbers out of Cuba were declining when they signed him. I mean, they were declining from like hitting 500 with max power, but like, right, they were coming down.
I mean, I think that I don't know that Kendrys Morales is the worst comp for him. Is that an unfair comp?
I mean, it's hard because it's a little weird with the whole, like, leg demolishing element of Kendrys. And I don't know how much that changed his career.
Sure.
Beyond the years he missed.
But he had you know, of an all the way dead 2014, which was years after the leg thing, and then bounce back to have like a very good 2015.
I mean, the 2014 was the let's skip spring training during a holdout year.
Yeah, that's true. But even so, like these, you know, these years, I don't know. I don't think it's the craziest comparison.
It's like, let's have a guy who doesn't have good condition to begin with, like, not go to big league camp.
Come out of Cuba at age 26, 27 with high contact, high power, very little patience, and zero athleticism. Posts a 924 OPS and then an 830 and then falls off a cliff. I don't know.
If I had the contact and power that Morales and Abreu both came out of Cuba with, I probably wouldn't be waiting for walks either.
No, it wasn't a character. I wasn't like judging their character.
I'm just admiring what used to be.
I'm describing their profile. I don't know if Abreu needs to DH next year, but
I mean he's making a case out there tonight.
It's just hard though to get too freaked out about Abreu in terms of the big picture of the roster when it's like, you know, you punted center field, DH, and catcher, and shortstop for most of the season, and maybe all of it.
I don't know. I'm pretty freaked out. I mean, he still has this. He had the capital to demand to play first, pretty much, this season. But I don't know. Next year might be kind of like, you suck and you'll play where you will tell you.
I just don't see why they have to be so the part of the problem is, I wonder if your credibility, and we've seen it actually to an extent, like if Ventura had actually ever experienced any success as a manager, or frankly, this front office has had success since like George Bush was president, like you'd have more cachet to be like, look, you know, we love you. You can't play first all the time anymore. We've got somebody better to play first now. Or, hey, Chris, you know, like, shut up and just wear the jersey. We know what we're doing. Because that prompts the very reasonable retort of, do you know what you're doing? And then, like, what evidence are you going to shove in their face? Like, well, we won a World Series 11 years ago. And, like, is that it?
Well, yeah, Chris Sale can't make the, why aren't we committed to winning if they're, like, you know, 10 games up in the AL Central. I mean, not that he like was justified in what he's doing, but he doesn't have like, I don't know, things, legitimate frustrations dependent on.
Right. Particularly on a roster where like you consistently pitch well in front of a horrible defense and offense, where it's like, what are we even doing with our position players?
It's a better defense.
Yes. It is better than, like, the worst in the majors, as it was last year.
What is the efficiency? I mean, I would assume it would be fine-ish.
It was sitting top 10 for a while. Give me a sec. This is good radio. they are currently ninth in park-adjusted defensive efficiency.
So, that's good.
Yeah. But this isn't the only year of Chris Sale's career.
And they traded Flowers. Or non-tendered Flowers.
Probably couldn't afford him. I mean, they were 27th last year. Defensively. But like, I don't know. If I had told you that this team had like added... Oh, this is the Byron Buxton game, isn't it?
No, not quite.
Oh, no. We got Avisail Garcia on the case.
I think he's going to need an IV.
He really does look like he's going to puke. He just ran 20 feet. Sorry. I mean, it's hard to defend Sale for his temper, and you know, we had that tweet today.
I wouldn't try to. What he did was crazy.
What did you make of that tweet today about Ventura having to like send him home for timeout like four times or whatever?
Oh, I didn't see that. I've napped a lot of today.
Oh, there was a tweet today from, I think it was Nightingale or somebody saying, you know, that Robin at like four different times this year has had to send Ventura, send Sale home to, quote, go in timeout or something.
That sounds awful.
Is it really that different from, like, I don't know, like Carlos Quinton being like unable to be DH because he was too much of like a psycho?
I would say a little bit.
Well, he's a pitcher though. Like, he doesn't need to. He's a starting pitcher. Like, frankly, if he's gonna freak out like on a day he's not pitching, like you could just be like, dude, just go home. Like, we don't need you here. Is that weird?
I would just expect the franchise, like, player to be a bit more on message, or you'd want him to be.
But, like, what is the message at this point? Are they trying to win or not?
Eventually.
What's the evidence that they're trying to win?
The evidence that they would use? I mean, they clearly made a lot of, like, short-term win-now moves. They just didn't make enough to really, or effective ones.
And they let Avisail Garcia destroy another season after they let Biscaito destroy like a number of seasons. It's the same. I've seen this movie so many times before.
I don't know what to tell you, Nick.
I'm kind of cheating because I'm asking you to defend the front office, which is pretty hard to do.
I mean, they've made a lot of moves that made me confident, that show a lot of skill, show a lot of ability to, like,
oh yeah,
plus value with little, like, prospect loss. I mean, there's a lot of, like, it's not, like, everything they, like, I was explaining the Terry Ryan situation to a non-baseball fan, and, like, I was saying, like, the Twins have been clearly awful, clearly, like, doing everything wrong for, like, years. And yeah. It's just, like, the level of respect that they had for Ryan is such that, like, this person would be so fired in almost any other context.
Right. I mean, he hadn't reached Isaiah Thomas levels or anything. But here's the thing is that, oh, my God. You have Terry Ryan made the playoffs more in 10 of his 20 years as GM than the White Sox have since I was born.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like the last 5 years where it's clear the Twins are bad and like not going anywhere.
The Twins in 2015 were better than any season the White Sox have had since 2010. I guess maybe 2012 the White Sox had more wins, but like, oh my God, pretty hard to watch. I agree, Terry Ryan, and I recommend everybody go listen to Gleeman and the Geek. Aaron Gleeman and John Bonas have like love a very entertaining conversation about this, and they definitely know more about the Twins than we do, or certainly more than I do. But yeah, like the thing is, Kenny Williams is coming up on what, like 14 years in charge, 15?
He came on after 2001.
He's almost been the GM as much as Terry Ryan had been.
I mean, he's not the, he hasn't been the GM.
Well, okay, I'm sorry. Like, been, I don't know what, I mean, all right, he got promoted above GM. But Han was his right-hand man before. He's there now. It's the same team. It's the same people in charge. I mean, specifically, the Terry Ryan teams eviscerated the Kenny Williams teams for, like, 6 years. Like, right in that the middle of that contention cycle.
But the distinction I was trying to make is that the White Sox don't seem as completely adrift, unable to do anything right, as that. Like, they do a lot of things well, they just don't do enough, and they don't kind of like have, like, they're not getting the extreme aggression right now that would seem to justify going for it, and they don't. They're not. It's good enough to kind of like, you know, what, straddle the fence. It's more like confounding that it is completely incompetent.
But at a certain point, doesn't like a process that defies explanation and also has terrible results, at a certain point, isn't that just incompetence?
It's its like, own kind.
Like, if I can't explain why they're doing what they're doing, but the results are, like, for a long time, people were you're bashing the Royals' decision-making, right? Like, a lot of people were, and then the Royals just started winning like crazy. And at a certain point, it's like, well, I would have never made these moves. And maybe they just got, like, a lot of luck. But I can't keep bashing them because clearly they were operating under some principles I didn't, like, understand or agree with. Or they took some calculated risks that panned out. And it's like, how, you know, like, I can't keep bashing them because it freaking worked.
Yeah, but they had three straight years of good to great teams.
Right, which the White Sox haven't done.
You can't take that.
So, like, to me, for a long time, I've just been like, I don't understand what they're doing. The ceiling of, like, they're chasing a very low ceiling that is also very low probability. I'm doing that for forever. And with the same people in charge and like making the decisions at every single level, like all the way down behind the scenes, you name it. Like, that's, as far as I understand it, that's been unchanged for like 20 years. So to me, at a certain point, I don't need to even keep looking at their process. I can just keep look. I can look at the results, because if, you know, this is so thoroughly the people in charge's process at this point. Because it's been the same people. Does any of this make any sense?
Yeah. I mean, I still don't understand this year, and I still don't understand what the vision is going forward, and how they're going to have an advantage over their peers.
I mean, what's the... Well, the advantage of your peers is you have Quintana and Sale for a combined, like $20 million.
But they don't.
That's the advantage. But they don't use that advantage. The advantage of that is that you can then spend elsewhere, like that money you're saving, on not having to spend $25 to $30 million on a number one starter and another $20 million on number two.
They can't. And assume that this is like the vertical limit of their budget, because why would they just not spend if they could? How they seek to distinguish themselves from the competition, then you need to save money by investing a lot in the international market. They can't do that because they're working from behind from the Wilder scandal still.
Well, also, a lot of very smart organizations seem to have identified that you can spend over the cap in a given year and lock up, like, a lot of guys, and then you only sign 300,000 or less dudes for 2 years on, like, three-year cycles.
Right, and
the White Sox refuse to do that.
The White Sox refuse to take any kind of efficiency that is against MLB rules.
But it's not against the rules.
Right, it's just like finding loopholes. They feel is like against the spirit.
It's not even a loophole. It's just, you can do this. There's just an extra cost to doing it. And teams have looked at it and said, this is worth the cost. It's not even against the rules. It just says, if you go over this line, you have like a couple of years where you can't keep spending that much. That's all it is.
I think the Sox view of incurring the penalty at all is just, like, not something they would ever do.
I agree. And that's been their MO for 20 plus, for forever.
Yeah, like, the fact that the whole hard slotting before there were hard slots in place.
Right, when nobody else was doing it. That worked out so well.
I can understand. Where are you going to, like... Where are you going to outpace the league in what you're doing if you don't spend in free agency? Go ahead.
The one edge they had, there are two advantages they seem to have on the rest of the league. One was keeping pitchers healthy, and the other was being willing to go after guys with builds and deliveries that scared everyone else and keeping them healthy and effective anyway, which is not nothing. That's like a pretty...
It's not nothing, but we've done it long enough to see that it's not enough on its own.
Yes. And especially when paired with, I don't know, trading away all the position players, like not being able to identify which of your own players, like,
Nick,
can't...
In your opinion, is it too late for Justin Minot to win the AL MVP?
He didn't deserve it in 06, so why not? 06 was great because neither MVP was the best player on their own infield that year.
Who was the big guy on the 06 Twins?
Maurer?
Oh, right. I guess the catcher is an infielder.
Is he not?
No. There's no justification for what I thought. I'll admit this.
And also, if you're really into wins over replacement, depending on your metrics, I think Santana was also ahead of Morneau on that team.
Not surprised.
He had ERA plus 162 and 233 innings that year. You have 5.2 to strikeout to walk ratio. Yeah.
My pinnacle Johan Santana memories are all involving like watching the White Sox against him, and like each turn to the batting order being like, getting a little bit closer, they're gonna get him, and then looking up. And, like, they have a runner on base. Like, someone crushes a double. Like, yeah, they're finally going to rally on him. And, like, looking up, like, oh, God, it's the top of the ninth.
Santana didn't bother me as much as a lot of the other Twins did because, like...
Carl Pavano.
Because he was, like, actually good instead of getting beaten by their, like, scrubs. Like, it's like, oh, well, Johan Santana does this to everyone. That's fine. As opposed to, like, well... Like, Joe Mays is going to, like, stomp on them with his, like, low 90s heat from the right side and, like, no breaking ball. You know, like, that was infuriating. Like, Santana was, like, I wasn't sitting there and being like, man, why can't they hit this guy? It's like, oh, well, he sits 96 and has, like, an unreal changeup. Like, obviously they can't hit him. Nobody can.
I think Kevin Slowey, Nick Blackburn.
Oh, Nick Blackburn.
Glenn Perkins as a starter were, like, guys. I was like, what is... Why are they not winning 7-0 right now?
I'm pretty sure we're a Jim Thome solo home run away from Nick Blackburn shutting them out in game 163, right?
Yeah.
And that means we're a Jim Thome solo home run from the White Sox not making the playoffs since 2005.
You're also a healthy Francisco Liriano away from that being true too.
Yeah, we're an effective Francisco Liriano away from the White Sox making the playoffs in 2012.
Hmm. That man's caused us a lot of problems.
So, okay.
They haven't traded Chris Sale during this podcast.
Do you actually think they're going to?
No.
This is a team that does nothing. Like, their standard. Like, in those years during, like, 2010, 2011, 2012, when they, like, quote, really went for it, they were, like, re-signing their own guys. They weren't, like, they weren't adding new talent. They were like, we re-signed Konerko and Przinski, and everyone's like, oh, man, they're doing it. It's like, no, that just means that it's the same team as last year. This team doesn't do anything, ever. Like, they don't do stuff. So, like, the biggest free agent they've ever signed was signing Jose Abreu. That happened 3 years ago. He was $68 million. Why are we assuming they're going to do something? Why would you ever bet that?
I mean, it is notable that the first, like, real rumors concerning Sale and Quintana have really churned up this year. But it's not a move that is beholden time-wise to the deadline at all. And the only ones that would maybe trying to get the most value out of Frazier and Lurie, who's hurt, so you're probably not getting a lot out of that. And that would be abandoning the 2017 plan, which at this point we don't really have any indication that they are.
So my article could have been summed up as, you know, if you're either punting 2017, like if you're trading Melky and Laurie and Frazier, then you might as well trade Sale and Quintana, because like you're just admitting that you're not competing in 2017, and that's just like another year where Sale and Quintana are just, you know, pitching really, really well for a doomed team. Maybe that's like myopic of me. Maybe you could trade one of the two. I guess Sale would get a bigger return and is under control for fewer years. And maybe you just say like, we'll get like a huge return for Sale. But I just find it hard to believe that you'll get a return for Sale that makes you better in 2017 and 2018 than you would be with Sale. Right?
Yes.
So if you're going to trade Sale, then like, why are you even bothering?
Like, unless you think like Sale is on a real decline slope right now, which.
Yes. There's evidence of that. It seems like an all or nothing proposition to me. I don't see much room for a partial sell off.
I would be captivated by a full sell off. I mean, the resulting teams would be like watching a train crash in real time, level terrible. But I don't know. I just want a direction, which goes to the whole like them just being confounding.
But like, yeah, and I mean, I guess there is a measurable difference between watching like a 75 win team versus like a 65 win team, and we've seen that in recent memory. But in a way, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's like a question of just like deciding like, yeah, I'm not going to watch again until the upswing kicks back in, because it's pretty hard to dedicate 3 hours of an evening just to watching like, oh, four Tim Anderson at bats and see how these go. When
I dedicate an evening to the slow process of documenting Tim Anderson becoming deeply sad.
Yeah. I said what I would do. And Wade Davis is apparently hurt now too, so.
I just got my visual reminder that Abraham Almonte is back from suspension by him hitting like a massive home run for the Indians, who are going to the playoffs. I don't know if you know this.
The Indians are a fascinating counterexample to the White Sox, because they just keep going to the playoffs like every 2 or 3 years without fail. And they have less money than the White Sox do. And they're kind of built on the same model as the White Sox. Like, their strength is the same as what the White Sox is, just like the front line of the rotation, which is homegrown or is acquired via trade from, you know, trading homegrown frontline starters. But they're, you know, actually able to, like, they signed Mike Napoli, and Mike Napoli is not, like, thrilling or very expensive for that matter, but he's been, like, a solid major league bat, and he's hit like for a bunch of power. They took a gamble on Marlon Byrd and got like 100 good plate appearances out of him. They took a gamble on Abel Almonte, and yeah, he PED'd, but like there's reason to believe Abel Almonte could be a good major leaguer. Like, they were willing to shuffle through the like bargain bin to find solutions for the holes that they have, and the White Sox just weren't.
I will say that looking at their franchise history, you're probably overselling their postseason success.
I mean, if we ignore the 90s, I guess.
Well, I thought you meant like the last of recent. I mean, the 90s, their strength was everything.
Right. But they won. Oh, I just had it. Where did it go?
They made the wild card game in 13, and they made the LCS in 2007.
They won 92 games in 2013.
Yeah, it was a good team. They won 93 games in 2005 and didn't make the playoffs.
Right.
But before that, they hadn't made it since 2001.
Yeah, maybe I am overselling it. They had some really bad years in there.
I mean, they're definitely a team with, if things go wrong, they have no ability to spend to fix it.
In 2008, I thought they wound up rallying in the second half after dealing Cliff Lee and Victor Martinez for kind of... No, I guess Carlos Carrasco was not like a bad return. Yeah, I'm probably overstating it, but it is interesting that, you know, they came into this year. Like, there isn't any real reason that they should be that much better than the White Sox this year. If you,
defense.
Well, we just talked about it. The White Sox defense is pretty good.
Well, I was making a joke about Pecota's defense productions for the Indians.
But you look at the Indians, they brought in a league average bat in the form of Napoli. I mean, Lindor is transcendent. They signed Juan Uribe. He's been terrible. Tyler Naquin's been amazing. But they've just been able to, like, generating Alani Chisenhall from within, or, like, signing a Rajay Davis, or... I had another one of these guys. I don't know. It's just amazing. Like, if you told me that they would miss, that they would lose Michael Brantley, that they would lose Carlos Carrasco for about a month, and that Yan Gomes would become, like, the worst player in baseball and then get hurt, like, I wouldn't have thought they'd have much of a chance.
Yeah, they've totally not had Brantley at all.
No, Brantley's had 43 plate appearances.
Terrible ones.
Yes. Like, imagine taking, like, Adam Eaton off of this team.
No thanks.
Well, we're seeing it tonight, I guess.
They're winning. They're studs.
You're right. Anyway, maybe I'm just repeating myself at this point. But, you know, as exciting it was be for, like, because, like, things have been so similar for so long, it says have them, like, deal Sale and Quintana, I'd be bummed. I guess it'd be, like, exciting to see, like, oh, maybe they'll get, like, Mazzara or whatever. And, like, stop it with the Profar stuff, because he's under control for fewer years than, like, Sale and Quintana are. So, like, what's the point? Stop.
10-year extension.
I mean, if they want to do Profar and Mazzara, like, okay, but why would they do that? As entertaining as it would be just to have, like, a shakeup like that, I don't actually think it's the smartest thing to do at this point. Because let's say, because like you said, James, they just can't spend more as, you know, like, let's say they just can't, even though I just think that's ridiculous. Let's just say this is the most they can spend. Why are we even bothering with the rebuild then? Like, what core are you going to put together that's better and more cost effective than this one?
Some sort of super system. I mean, you got to try, because if this is the ceiling, then, and they need to spend over what they're currently spending to do it, then they're not going to make it. So,
but like this team, you didn't need to spend that much more money to be much better.
But they somehow hit their limit. So
don't spend $12 to $13 million on a closer, and don't, like, I don't know, don't blow all your money on, like, the Adam LaRoches and James Shields of the world. Don't trust Avisail Garcia with 650 plate appearances a year. Those aren't hard things to do. Or maybe they are. I'm not employed by a team.
You're not?
No, not anymore.
You're not doing legal work for... I guess the Padres are the ones who need it now.
No, aren't they cutting him?
Apparently they'll look into it. Rosenthal was talking about, like... It's always great to make a trade, and then the reporters are talking about, like, what happens if the player you just acquired goes to prison. Like, what are the financials involved?
I mean, if you... That's what's weird is, like, how badly do you need to save, like, a couple million bucks where, like, you're trading Kemp and you're paying some of his salary. But, like, Kemp is, by all accounts, like, a great guy, right? Am I just thinking of when he gave his, like, uniform and cleats to that disabled guy?
I'm just looking into his eyes, and I agree that he's a great guy.
Compared to Hector Oliveira, there's a strong case that he's a great guy, right?
I mean, he's a lot more handsome.
Okay.
And also not a domestic abuser.
Just like a very weird... I guess the Braves not have any other, like, bad contracts to take on?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like dead money for someone not that useful, but, you know, it's better than dead money for a disgusting human being.
Yeah. Oh, well. At least we're not the... We don't root for the Padres, I guess?
I don't know. The weather's nicer.
Yeah, but I don't live at either place.
I mean, at least Jerry is not, like, poisoned an asset by, like, trashing him in the pub newspapers right before they traded him.
Well, we're starting to get Sale getting trashed in the newspapers because, like I said, that leak about the timeouts is happening.
Yeah, I need to find that, given that this I write about this team.
Yeah, well, you always kind of mailed it in.
For sure.
Okay, well, I think my article laid out my position. I've yet to really be persuaded unless you do some sort of hybrid thing where you, like, sell Sale and then maybe actually, like, sign Cespedes or something and, you know, you count on Rodon Quintana. I mean, you have, like, right now you have 2017's rotation just, like, set, right? I mean, you have Sale, Quintana, Rodon, Miguel Gonzalez, and James Shields, which seems like a pretty, like, solid group to go into next year with. You have a whole year to, you have the whole offseason to accumulate, you know, starters 6, 7, 8 as fallback options.
I would caution that swapping out Sale for, like, Carson Fulmer would probably be the difference between being pretty good and quite bad.
I agree. So I'm saying, like, that was part of my case for 2017 is that you have a starting five for next year, unless Shields opts out, in which case, like, that's kind of okay too. But, you know, I guess if people, part of the argument for selling, like, Sale and Quintana or doing, like, a scorched earth rebuild seems to be, the two arguments seem to be, one, like, well, it worked for the Astros and Cubs, and it's like, yeah, kind of, like, that was one of the reasons it kind of helped, although they made a ton of mistakes along the way that might have obviated, like, the Rangers are the counterexample to that. And that, like, what the reason why I'm hesitant about it is a lot of people seem to want to do it just because they're frustrated and, like, sick of the team trying and failing to win with this setup.
Yeah, that's my reasoning.
Like, it's frustrating, but, like, are you making the decision because you're upset or, like, frustrated? Like, that doesn't seem to be, like, a good reason to do something.
I don't see a way forward or a plan to change the current way forward.
Theoretically, your rotation right now going into 2016 would be better than it was for this year, right? For next year?
More likely than not.
On the theory that Rodon improves and Gonzalez and Shields are probably better than Danks and Lados?
Yeah, and, you know, hoping for maintenance of Sale and Quintana.
Okay, is it, what about the theory that 2016 Abreu is better than 2015 Abreu?
More likely than not.
Okay, so we're already improving. And let's say, I could pull up a list of free agents. Let's say you actually add a couple major, let's say you add, like, an okay catcher somehow. And
do you know of one?
And you add, like, a Morneau-esque option at DH for, like, the whole year instead of halfway through.
Cash is a free agent.
Okay, there you go.
So is Wilson Ramos.
Yeah.
That might be a little pretty penny.
Wilson Ramos is going to get paid. but, like, haven't I already sort of, like, I mean, because this team could have succeeded. It just needed reinforcements and then just didn't get them.
Yes, you made your point. I agree with you. I just,
all right.
They need to prove it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's funny is a lot of the objections to that article, a lot of the comments or people on Twitter were saying things like,
total,
yeah, but
fatalism.
Like, was like the ownership's terrible and like this front office hasn't proven they can do it. I'm like, no, I didn't say this is what I think they will do. I'm saying this is what they should do. And whether they will is a different question because the front office has not been doing what I would do for a long time. So. And on that note, Can't wait to wake up Tuesday morning and have all this be obsolete.
Because Jerks and Profar will be the new face of the White Sox.
Right. Totally changing their window from now to 2019 to now to 2019.
All right. This has gone on very long.
Cool. All right. Night, bud.
Good night.